Stay tuned for the Healthy Planet radio program on WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook.
The images are scary for anyone, but the war in Ukraine may cause worry and even fear in small children who see or hear about the unrest. When talking to them, keep it straightforward, says Cleveland Clinic pediatric psychologist Vanessa Jensen.
It's far away, and that's something that grown-ups do. Let the grown-ups take care of this right now. We get to take care of you, and then we'll make sure the adults take care of that. So sometimes you just need to simplify it.
Jensen says kids of any age can be bothered by what they're seeing. The images can show up in nightmares and night terrors. She says it's a good idea to monitor what children see and guard against showing disturbing images to younger children. If a child has seen something upsetting, Jensen says to ask lots of questions to gauge what they know and how they feel.
If you see things or hear things that either you wonder about or that just are kind of scary, you know, let's talk about it. Help them normalize those thoughts. It's okay to feel kind of scared that this is happening in our world.
If a child is feeling unsafe, Jensen says it might help to show them Ukraine on a map so they see the fighting is far away. No matter your child's age, she says all children need extra support and reassurance from their parents right now. For Health Minute, I'm Mandy Gaither.
And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that's always in front of you, right now. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world, which is what all of us want. So lately, it seems like I start a lot of our shows by saying something like, well, after almost two decades of doing this radio show, this is the first time we're talking about this topic or that topic, despite the fact that often these topics are quite related to the aims of this show. And here we are again, covering a topic that we have missed for many years, and that is animal advocacy and rescue on Long Island. And we've over and over again made the case for treating non-human creatures on this planet with respect and compassion, and we've gone into some of the philosophical, ethical reasons for that and the many ways that we can play a role in reducing animal suffering in the world, whether they're the animals that are traditionally eaten by our culture or the ones that we tend to live with or around. But what about those animals that society either abuses or uses for economic gain or are abandoned or neglected, or who otherwise need help in a world run by humans, but they don't have a voice to communicate that need to humans? Who attends to them? We all wish someone would do it. We see animal suffering and it's like, oh, I hope someone does something about that. But who actually looks out for them? Who takes action on their behalf when human laws to protect them are maybe insufficient or non-existent? Well, that's the topic of this show. And I have on the line someone who has had firsthand experience acting on behalf of animals from deer to geese to horses, circus and farm animals, and many more. You'll hear all about it in the coming hour. His name is John DiLeonardo. John is an anthrozoologist and the founding director of a leading animal advocacy organization on Long Island known as Long Island Orchestrating for Nature, or LION, which is a volunteer-run charity. John and Lion have stopped massacres of thousands of animals and operate Long Island's only shelter for domestic fowl. And we'll hear all about that. John has also been honored to receive awards from the Suffolk County SPCA, the Humane Society of the United States, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and in defense of animals. He also had the distinction of being named, yes, Mr. February in Rescue Men USA's 2016 calendar. So welcome to the Healthy Planet, John DeLeonardo.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on, Bob.
Of course. It's really a pleasure after all this time. John, you have a really interesting background. As I briefly mentioned in the intro, that includes a Master's of Science degree in anthrozoology and a Bachelor of Arts in psychology, as well as a graduate certificate in Jane Studies. So that's a really nice rounded group of studies that covers the interaction between humans and animals, the study of the human mind, as well as a spiritual perspective on nonviolence. And that's perfect because of what you ended up doing. So I want you to start out by talking about some of your academic backgrounds and how you ended up working in the field of animal protection and rescue.
Sure, yeah. So when I was growing up, I always wanted to help the group that needed the most help. I wanted to have the biggest impact on the largest group of people. And over time, that's evolved. You know, when I was young, you know, I was the kid who was beating up bullies and sticking up for those kids getting bullied. And
that's nice.
Yeah, well, it was nice.
Not that you beat up people, but that you were there for the people who couldn't protect themselves.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I actually gotten involved with gangs when I was young because of that. We had a lot of vigilante type stuff. We had good intentions, but when you're a 15-year-old kid trying to parent other 15-year-old kids, you don't always do everything right. So, like I said, as my worldview grew, my methods of changing the world grew. You can't beat up all your oppressors in life. So the group that I was advocating for grew dramatically as well. So when I first went to college, my dream was to be a school psychologist. I wanted to help kids when they were struggling in school. I wanted to be there for the kids getting bullied, the kids with special needs, and try to make sure everyone had a fair shake early on and set them on that right path, or help them get back on if they were straying. And then I was very passionate too about religious studies at the time. I had identified as Christian, and I was a Eucharistic minister. I was even a rectory worker. When I was in high school, the leader of our gang actually went to prison. And then I assumed, leadership for a period. And then when I was going away to college, I had an easy way to get out because I was going to be hours away. But I decided I wouldn't weigh on my conscience to, appoint someone else in charge and let them, get killed or go to prison I didn't want to just escape me. I wanted to help everyone escape that and do better. So I broke up the gang right before I left and told everyone, I'm not appointing a new leader. This is over. You're all better than this. And then I went away to college. And while I was in college, I said, if I'm going to be Christian and want to follow these values, I want to learn about it. So I started taking religious studies courses in addition to my psychology courses. And I took a world religions course that really altered my life drastically. I learned about a religion called Jainism, which is historically vegetarian. They're the first people in the world to start animal sanctuaries, first people in the world to start animal shelters. And, they really inspired me. I read about how, the most ascetic monks would literally be waiting for berries and nuts to fall off trees because they didn't want to molest the trees. So, I really, coming from a gang background, I saw myself as macho, and I was like, these guys are literally waiting for trees for nuts and berries to fall off trees. And I say it's too hard to give up chicken. I'm pathetic. So I really kind of shamed myself into doing the right thing. I remember right after learning about that, I went to our dining hall and loaded up a big plate of chicken like I always did. But I looked at it and I couldn't eat it. I shoved it away and I never had meat again. And then I started taking more courses in the Eastern religions. And they really spoke to me a lot more than the Western religions ever did. So a year later, I took a course called Religion and the Environment. And I read a book by Matthew Scully, who's a conservative Christian, you know, speechwriter for George Bush and Sarah Palin. So not the typical liberal animal rights activist that people think of. But he is his chapter on dairy and, you know, baby cows being torn from their mothers and being killed so that we can consume the milk that is rightfully theirs. That made me go vegan. The name of his book was Dominion. I encourage everyone to check it out. You can get it on Amazon, Dominion by Matthew Scully. He argued that dominion means stewardship. It doesn't mean domination. If you look at the historical critical perspective of the original meaning behind that word, it predates our concept of dominion as domination. So he said, if for us to be good stewards to God's creation, we shouldn't be eating animals. We shouldn't be exploiting them, and certainly not in the ways that we are in factory farms here in the States and around the world.
That's amazing. And, you know, you look at a religion, first of all, that talks about dominion. And if that religion has dominion meaning domination, that's kind of a red flag, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's amazing how, you know, many well-meaning and caring and loving people fall back upon their religion to justify things they do in their lives that end up causing enormous amounts of suffering to animals. Mm-hmm. And I say this not because it's some people, but I find it's almost the majority of people I speak to who, once they've exhausted all other arguments about why they think it's okay to kill a chicken to eat when there are plenty of other alternatives, so it's basically a choice, that it almost always comes down to their religious belief that justifies them being able to do it. That's a bit scary.
Yeah, I mean, I did that for a long time, honestly. I remember when I was a kid asking in Sunday school why we ate animals, why it was okay to eat animals. And I remember being reprimanded and basically told, well, because God said so. And as I got older, you know, that reason didn't really stand anymore. And my understanding now is that God didn't say so, you know. I mean, even if you do subscribe to a Judeo-Christian perspective, you know, in the Old Testament, the garden was vegan, you know, even at the end of the Bible, we talk about, you know, when the lion lays with the lamb. I mean, I think that veganism is something that is really there throughout every single kind and caring religion, if you care to read it.
And we don't relate to the people who put on suicide vests and blow themselves up in crowds in the name of their religion, because we don't believe that having religion justify violence makes sense. So what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And I had a similar experience in college when I grew up with in the religion that I was in, Christianity. And then I found Eastern religions that were talking about not eating animals. And I had made the choice to not eat animals. It was just unfathomable to me in college, this happens, that I would ever eat an animal again, and I never have. And then I found a religion that supported that, and it felt like coming home. It's like, mm-hmm. Religious people are talking about not killing animals. This is very refreshing. And even though it was a home I had never visited, it was like coming home. So I can very much relate to what you're saying and how you're talking about all this.
Yeah, I remember when, before I learned about Jainism, I had never met a vegetarian, I'd never met a vegan before I stopped eating animals. So it was a foreign concept to me. And I remember just thinking like that people who didn't eat meat were just, you know, sick and scrawny people who didn't, you know, go to the hospital and die or end up, you know, going back to eating meat. And now, I mean, I mean, that's just a fantasy. That's what the agribusiness wants you to believe so that you continue to buy their products.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, I actually, when I was in college, it was a nice little case study because I actually worked for the Department of Public Works while I was in college seasonally every summer. So the first year that I was working there, and you know, I was doing a lot of sanitation work. So I was, you know, running and lifting for hours at a time. And then after that, I would be, you know, jackhammering roadways or chopping wood, a lot of heavy manual labor. And the first year, I remember, it was hard work. And at that time, you know, I was bench pressing 270 pounds as, you know, 135 pound guy. So, you know, I was putting up some serious weight. I thought I was in great shape, but I was eating meat and it was a hard job. The second year, I had, you know, learned about Jainism. I gave up eating meat. I was still having dairy, but, you know, I was living that party life, so I wasn't really working out so much. But the job was somehow easier. And then the third year, I still was living that college party life, still not, you know, working out as much, but I was vegan. And I was just running alongside the garbage truck, shadow boxing, working out after work. I had all the energy in the world, and I didn't lose any strength. So it really was a nice little, you know, case study for myself, unintentionally. Cause I remember when I first went vegan, I was telling myself, oh, I'm going to be scrawny, but I guess it's for the animals. So I guess that's what I have to do. And it was the exact opposite. I got stronger. My stamina skyrocketed. You know, I was in the best shape of my life.
I can echo your story as well. I thought I was going to be hurting myself at the beginning, and it turned out to be just the opposite. The more I learned, the more I researched, I found that I was actually becoming stronger and giving myself the potential to live a much more healthful, longer life. Mm-hmm. And I learned from the only person I had met who ever talked to me about not eating meat was my karate instructor in college. And he didn't even mention it, say much about it. I just asked him why he wasn't eating cold cuts at an event. And he said, I wouldn't kill something or harm anything that wasn't trying to harm me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand that at the time, but I got it a couple of years later. And and it hit me. And that's, again, same as you. Never went back, never looked back, never regretted it. And I have always placed it as one of the top few decisions that I've made in my life, easily.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of athletes, NFL players. There's, you know, Germany's Strongest Man is vegan. You know, there's Nate Diaz, who, you know, who took down Conor McGregor and knocked him out and his first loss in the UFC. He's vegan. So it really is, you know, you can be both macho and vegan if you so choose.
Yeah. Professional sports is really getting strong candidates who are vegan. So mm-hmm. and think about it, John. We had no role models, and yet we figured it out. Think about kids today who have, you know, Serena Williams and just all these athletes at the top of their sports who are vocal about not eating animals. And then so many others like politicians, mm-hmm. Eric Adams, you know, who's doesn't eat many animals in Brooklyn, Cory Booker, you know, some of the other presidential candidates talking about how they were vegan. Just it's a different world. So where we're going from here, the trajectory has greatly changed. And that's amazing to see, because it's really all of us becoming not something different. We're not converting to something else. We're just living out the values that we truly believe in to begin with. And that feels good. And it feels good for everybody who's realizing it. And many people in my generation and your generation didn't have the opportunity to latch on to that and to figure that out for ourselves from others.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even just the products and the opportunities it's so easy to give up eating meat nowadays. I don't even want to say give up, because you're not giving anything up. You're just switching over. If you like burgers, then, you know, okay, have something with more protein and less fat that's better for you, made from plants in the Beyond Burger. You can get it at Stop and Shop. You can get it at TGI Fridays if you don't want to make it yourself. I mean, I couldn't imagine veganism being so accessible when I first went vegan. I remember I was eating a lot of salad and tofu back then.
yeah, exactly. Well, it's an amazing thing that I also would not have expected that it would have come to this level right now. I knew it would be a gradual play, but I think there's a point where you reach that magic number of enough people in society getting it, and then it explodes. Because again, it's an idea whose time has come, and it's not something that people have to change to be a part of. It's something people just have to realize about themselves. And then there it is. It's a reality in those people's lives.
Absolutely.
This is Bob DiBenedetto on The Healthy Planet on WUSB 90.1 FM. I'm speaking to anthrozoologist and the founding director of Long Island Orchestrating for Nature, or LION, John DiLeonardo. So going back to Long Island Orchestrating for Nature, And the website is www.humanelongisland.org. HumaneLongIslands.org. It states that whether it's canceling wild or exotic animal acts, stopping wildlife culls, or rescuing waterfowl from icy lakes, we're constantly working to make Long Island a kinder and safer place for all its beings. Now, you've been involved in a wide variety of animal protection actions for quite some time. Tell us what you see as some of the most significant victories you've had in these years.
Yeah, I mean, we were founded in 2012 originally as a circus protesting group. I just recently gone vegan. I somehow got on PETA's email list, and they sent me an email urging us to come out and protest Ringling Brothers Circus on my spring break. So I went out there, and, you know, never being at a protest before in my life, not really knowing what to expect. But everyone was very welcoming. It wasn't rowdy like everyone thinks, you know, a protest would be. It was just a bunch of kind people holding up signs and peacefully giving out information about the horrific treatment that these animals were suffering at the hands of their captors. So at that time, you know, the people who were leading the protest were elderly. So they said, all right, some young blood, I guess next year you're organizing. And I went, what? This is my first protest, but okay. So we started protesting the following year, organizing, and it went really well. So there was another circus called Cold Brothers that was coming to town. And I had asked, does anyone protest Cold Brothers? And everyone said no. So I said, well, why not? So we went out and we started protesting Cold Brothers Circus. And that first summer, it was we saw so many people turn around and not give money to the circus and go elsewhere. We were telling everyone, because at Ringling Brothers Circus, people typically bought tickets online. So we were asking people not to come back. But with Cold Brothers Circus, you know, it's a lot more personal. Instead of driving in, people were walking up. They usually hadn't bought their tickets yet. So we could actually convince them to go spend their money elsewhere. So we saw thousands of dollars every single night go out of the circus's pocket. Wow. So it was very, very empowering.
John, before you go on, I want you to mention just a little bit about why you would protest the circus.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So circuses, when you see an elephant standing on her head or, in these unnatural contortions, you must wonder, how did they get that animal to do that? And the answer is they masturbated a male elephant and then forcefully impregnated a female elephant, took away her babies, just like they take away, cows' babies from them for the dairy industry. They take them away from them when they're very, very young for the circus industry. And then they chain that mother elephant and the baby elephant on opposite sides of a barn so they can see each other but can't console each other. And it breaks that animal spirit. Then they chain the legs of that baby and they tie ropes around them and really force them into those unnatural and painful contortions that you see. I mean, no elephant wants to stand on their head or stand on their hind legs. You know, they're hundreds and thousands of pounds. It's very, very painful to them. Foot infections and joint infections are actually the leading cause of death in captive elephants, because once you get a little cut on that foot from standing on the concrete all day long, and you're forced to stand in these unnatural positions with all that weight on them, something small becomes something big very, very quickly. So if you tried to make an adult elephant, you know, stand on her head, chances are they're just going to run the opposite way because they're not combative animals. But if you corner them, you're going to get squashed. So they don't try to break the adult elephants. They use them for breeding. And then the babies, they will take them. They'll have several men tie ropes around them and pull them into unnatural contortions, use stun guns on them and beat them with something called a bull hook. All the torture that they give to them, they have this bull hook, which is it's like a heavy metal baton, looks just like a fireplace poker, has a spike on top, and a hook on one end. And they beat the elephant with that bullhook the whole time, teaching that elephant to fear the bullhook. So then when that elephant grows older, they see that bullhook on stage and they don't need to be beaten anymore with that bullhook in front of the crowd because they know what it is and they've learned to fear it since they were very, very young. So it's like a post-traumatic stress reaction. So when they're up on stage, you know, if you ever see a trainer at the circus, he has this long, elegant pole. Sometimes it has tassels on the other end. The tassels are hiding the hook on that bullhook.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So these elephants aren't performing willingly. The tigers that are in these cages, they should have, you know, hundreds of acres of terrain to be their territory. But instead, they're being forced into boxcars and beaten for our enjoyment. So I think most people, when they learn about these things, they don't want to support the circus. So we encourage people to only support animal-free circuses where the performers are willing and they get to retire when they wish. They get to go home at the end of the day. These animals don't have that choice. And so when we were educating the public, we would get free literature from PETA to give out. And then we'd be out there in elephant costume, giving out children's coloring books that explain this issue to the children at their level, and then adult literature to the parents. So usually we'd set up shop about a block away from the circus and try that light approach with some signs and, you know, some coloring books. And then if people ignored the, you know, that nice approach, we'd have people a little more rowdy, maybe with a megaphone down the block, a little closer to the circus. And then our final year protesting Cole Brothers Circus, we actually set up a 50-inch television right in front of the tent that played footage of the head trainer from Cole Brothers, Tim Frisco, beating an elephant on camera and, you know, yelling profanities and threats and, you know, swinging that bull hook like a baseball bat, as well as using a stun gun on her. So, yeah, really, really brutal stuff. But what we found is most people didn't want to support that. They just simply didn't know. I mean, there's always going to be some people who really don't care that are cold-hearted. But fortunately, that's the minority. A majority of people, they wouldn't support that if they knew what was going on. They wouldn't eat meat. They wouldn't go to the circus. They wouldn't go to SeaWorld if they knew about what they were, really knew what they were paying for. So we actually, my proudest victory maybe is the end of Cole Brothers Circus. We saw their attendance plummet drastically over the years when we were protesting them. We went from protesting, you know, just their Oceanside location to every single location on Long Island, from Greenport all the way, you know, to Belmont. And we saw a lot of venues not allow them back. And we saw attendance at the venues that repeatedly have them just dwindled to almost nothing. I remember the first year that we were protesting, there were cars lined up for blocks and blocks. People were crossing, you know, major roads to get there because they couldn't find parking. And then the last year we were protesting, they couldn't even fill up a single block. So it was very empowering to see. One of the founders of our organization, which is another a nice little victory here too, he was actually a hunter at the time when we founded our organization. I'm not the one who said, you know, let's start Lion. I'm the one who said, let's go get out and protest the circus. But it was because those Cole Brothers Circus protests were so successful that, you know, a whole group of people who were there, you know, who I had recruited to protest said, hey, we have to do this for other issues. This is so impactful. We're doing so good. And I went over and I said, hey, yeah, it's a great idea. Who's in charge? And they all pointed at me. And that's how Lion started. But I can't take credit for the idea. You know, it was just other folks, including, like I said, a hunter who's now vegan. He wasn't even supposed to come to the protest. He was his name was Nick. He was a friend of my friend Mark. I went to pick him up for the opening show protest outside Cole Brothers Circus in Oceanside. And I saw this kid leaving Mark's house as I was picking him up. Apparently they were playing basketball. So I said, hey, where are you going? Get in the car. You know, and he said, no, I'm a hunter. I don't protest the circus. So I said, oh, you're a hunter. So that means, so you think it's okay to beat elephants with a bullhook? And he said, no, that's messed up. And I said, yeah, it is. Get in the car. So he did. He got in the car. He joined us for that. We didn't talk about hunting. We didn't talk about, you know, going vegan, but he agreed to come and stand up for the elephants. And then he didn't just come out that day. He came out for the next five consecutive days until the circus left. And he was one of those people saying, we need to do this for other issues. We need to protest. Hmm. So at the end, we had to celebrate, you know, Cole Brothers leaving town. We went to Three Brothers, you know, vegan pizza. He ordered non-vegan stuff and I ordered vegan stuff for everybody. So he actually tried some and he liked it. He had some vegan mozzarella sticks and he was like, wow, this is amazing. So then our next campaign was protesting Merrick Furs in Merrick. and it was actually pretty funny because it was on Fur Free Friday. It was Black Friday to most of the world, just animal activists. We see that as Fur Free Friday. It's an international day of fur, anti-fur activism. So we actually went to protest Angelic Furs in Wantagh. And I guess they got wind of our protest, so they didn't even open. They had shuttered everything and they were hiding from us. Hmm. So we're like, well, this is a great victory, but just kind of silly, you know, just standing here in front of this closed store. So we looked up the next closest place, which is Merrick Furs, which ended up being a much better location. I mean, back then I didn't know anything about protest organizing. I just picked a fur store that was in my girlfriend at the time's hometown. Yeah. It was a terrible location, but like I said, they closed. So good. So we went, we were protesting Merrick, and Merrick was on a perfect location. It was on Sunrise Highway. There was parking was in the back, but the entrance was in the front. So whoever was there to buy fur, they had to park in the back and then walk past us to get into the store. So we were able to, you know, get honks of support from people on Sunrise Highway so that the people in the store would hear it and be shamed about it. And then actually be able to reach out to the customers and give them literature and speak to them if they were willing. So that, again, went very successfully. And we ended up saying, okay, well, let's make Fur Free Friday every Friday. And we started protesting Merrick Furs every Friday for about 3 years. The final year, actually, we all had different jobs and life got busy. So we said, we can't do it every Friday, but we're going to do it one day a week. On randomly, we just got together every week and decided what day, and that even threw off the furriers even more because they didn't know when to expect us and they got used to us being there on Friday. So at the end of the third year, they actually closed up shop. They said, you know, they're retiring and going down to Florida. I like to think we had something to do with that. But after about a month of protesting Merrick Furs, that kid Nick, who was a hunter, he gave up hunting and he became vegetarian because the jump from don't trap animals for their fur is just so it's almost the same jump as don't eat animals for their flesh. So he stopped hunting and he went vegetarian, and a year later he went vegan, and he's still vegan to this day. So that's probably my proudest vegan conversion. And Cold Brother is probably my proudest victory. It took a few years. It's not like, you know, Cold Brothers closed all of a sudden after we protested them a year. But we started protesting them, I think, at the end of 2012. And in 2015 is when we really saw a very noticeable decline in their attendance. It was steady over the years, but that I remember thinking that year, wow, they have it is bare here. And then we got Islip to deny their permits to perform there. So we pulled the rug out from under them in Islip. And then they actually went viral on the Associated Press. And we got a lot of press coverage nationally about it. So someone in New Jersey saw the story and said, hey, Cold Brothers is coming to me next. What can I do to stop them and get them denied here too? And she was amazing. This woman, Joan, in West Deptford, New Jersey, she did everything that I asked, which was quite a lot. You know, it does take a bit to make these things happen, but she was dedicated. She presented to her Lions Club that was hosting them. She attended some of their fundraisers and talked to them. And, you know, she really worked them on the inside and publicly. And they agreed to not only cancel the upcoming performance, but to never allow them back again. So between those two cancellations and the dramatic decrease in attendance, Cole Brothers went bankrupt. And they actually, we found out they went into severe debt with American Express. So they closed up shop and they don't exist anymore. So that's probably my proudest victory. But since then, we've stopped a slaughterhouse from opening in Islip. You know, they wanted to kill 40,000 birds every single year in Islip. And we got their permits denied there.
That's big.
It's another proud victory. We got Sequest Aquariums, which is a very sordid mole aquarium chain. They've gotten their license revoked or suspended, you know, in various locations like Las Vegas and Colorado. You know, they have had violations all over. One of the founders actually was previously arrested for illegal trade in sharks. And he actually went to prison for it, got out, started Sequest with his brother. And then he actually went back to prison because starting Sequest, he was supposed to stay out of the aquarium industry as a condition of his parole. So he violated that, went back. Sequest still survived somehow, but they did not survive their attempt to come here to New York. And then through my work with PETA and the wonderful activists in Florida, we also locked them out of Florida when they were trying to come to Fort Lauderdale. So Long Island, it's a hard place to abuse animals if you're looking to do it. So if there's anyone thinking about starting an abusive animal business here, you know, be warned. Don't do it. Don't do it here. Don't do it elsewhere, because people are becoming more and more aware and people are going to stand up to these businesses. So we've stopped aquariums. We've stopped slaughterhouses. We've stopped massacres of geese, massacres of deer. Our actually first... you know, we came out at the gate swing. I think we started November of 2012. It was our first formal event as Lion. It was our protest of Merrick First. And then by May of 2013, we actually got Piccadilly Circus canceled at the New York Equestrian Center in West Hempstead. And then 3 weeks later, we got North Hempstead to tear up a contract with the USDA Wildlife Services who was planning to kill 600 geese in that municipality. So we really came out the gate swinging with those and started getting a reputation. So as people would Google, you know, someone would hear about a goose cull or a deer cull. You know, I don't even like the word cull. I mean, I think it's a hunting term. A deer massacre, a goose massacre is really the more accurate term. You know, they would Google how to help. They'd find our number and they'd contact us. So now we're proud to be a big resource for advocacy all over Long Island. So much so that I actually worked for PETA for 7 years. I was their senior manager, their animals entertainment campaigns and their grassroots campaigns. So I oversaw all their work related to activist-led demos and tabling events and our vegan mentor program, as well as all our campaigns from dog sledding operations to circuses to SeaWorld. And I love that work, but the work on Long Island was growing dramatically as well. So in July, I actually decided to leave PETA and pursue this full time. And since then, we've gotten close to 100 more media stories locally speaking out for animals. We've given out thousands of pounds of vegan food to the public, as well as thousands of pounds of pet food to our sanctuary partners. And we've rescued hundreds of animals directly from all types of abuse. We actually rescue about 600 domestic birds every single year, about 400 or so wild animals. But the numbers can vary quite a bit, actually. We actually we worked with the South Huntington School District last year. They were actually draining a sump to put in like new sump system, I guess. But they hadn't really thought about what's going to happen to the animals who are inhabiting that. So we reached out to them, and to their credit, they were immediately receptive to us and halted the project and then worked with us to relocate as many animals as we could, which ended up being about 20,000 tadpoles and minnows, about 2,000 goldfish and 150 bullfrogs. So So certainly the numbers fluctuate quite a bit, but domestic fowl is kind of our steady. We rescue animals from live slaughter markets in New York City. We rescue domestic ducks who are abandoned to the wild all the time. People will get them in the spring, they'll do school hatching projects without really a plan for what to do with the animals after they hatch, or they'll get little ducklings or chicks for Easter photo shoots, not realizing that within a month they're going to be pooping machines, and you can't keep them in your cramped apartment. A lot of times these chicks will grow up to be roosters, and roosters are against your town code. So a lot of people panic and they'll dump them in the woods, or they'll dump them on a lake in the case of ducks, not realizing that a domestic duck is drastically different than a wild duck. I mean, they have tiny wings and large bodies. They don't have any camouflage. They don't have, they can't forage adequately for food, and they're literally sitting ducks for predators. If they are lucky enough to survive till winter, when that pond freezes over, they either freeze to the ice and die, or they starve. So that's become a large part of what we do.
You run a shelter in Riverhead for domestic fowl.
Yep. Yeah. We actually, as I left PETA, we made a big move to Riverhead. Right now we're on a half acre out here, and we're looking for a property to expand. This is a temporary property. It's nice. I think we have a beautiful setup for the animals. We have about 40 birds right now, all up for adoption. So if anyone does think that they have what it takes to adopt a duck or adopt a chicken, we're always looking for homes, especially for roosters and especially for ducks. So right now we have about 40 birds. And most of them are domestic waterfowl. A few geese, we have placement for them though, and a few chickens who also have their home set up, but lots of ducks who are not yet claimed. So if anyone is looking, they got to keep in mind, ducks can live for 10, 12 years, and you need a predator-proof enclosure for them. If you go away, you need to make arrangements for them, just like you would a dog or a cat.
And contact information if anybody is interested in doing so?
Yeah, you can contact us at humanelongisland.org.
Humanelongisland.org.
We're also on social media. We're at HumaneLI on Facebook and on Instagram. So you can contact us there, and you can see what we have going on there too. We have lots of pictures of cute and videos of cute ducks and our setup. So we're happy to show you how we do it. And if you think you can, you'd like to do it, fantastic. We also encourage people to foster, to adopt. If you're not sure about, if you're in it for the long haul, well, foster them for a little bit and see if you want to keep them permanently, or if you just want to help them get from point A to point B. Either one helps.
This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet Radio Show on WUSB 90.1 FM. We're speaking to anthrozoologist and the founding director of Long Island Orchestrating for Nature, or LION, John D. Leonardo. So, John, rescuing and sheltering fowl means that you've spent a lot of time around these creatures, and you've gotten to know them much better than most people ever get to know them. Tell us a little bit about their personalities, what you experience being around them, how you interact with them, how they interact with you, anything that'll give our listeners an idea or some insight into who they are beyond being just cute.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're individuals. It's hard to say, to generalize them even, because each one has, their individual personality. I mean, you're not supposed to have favorites, but my favorite right now is this cute little, really beautiful little old woman duck who's she's a magpie duck. She's gray and white. She has arthritis, and she has obviously had some developmental issues with her legs. We rescued her along with a whole bunch of other ones from a petting zoo that we got to shut down last year. We worked with Party Pets of New York to shut down their petting zoo last year, and we placed all their animals for them. And this little girl is still up for adoption. She was in very rough shape when we got her. But she is very, very spunky. So once we got her the care she needed, she bounced back. She loves playing with little rubber duckies in the pools. She, um, She's very, very independent. She's doesn't want anyone, any of the young ones too close to her, maybe a little grouchy, but a sweetheart. So they're all very, very different. We have some ducks that you know, want to be held, others that just want to be near you, others who want nothing to do with you. Just give me my food and that's it. So it's really interesting to see the personalities at play here. And the bonding of these animals too. We always encourage people, you can't just adopt one duck. Or unless you have your own flock, I mean, maybe, but you need a flock. They're flock animals. So you can't just keep one duck. You need to keep a group of them. Luckily, we'll caring for, you know, 5 ducks or caring for 10 ducks or caring for 2 ducks, the care is pretty much the same. You know, if you're caring for ducks, you're going to put about the same amount of work in until you get to the high numbers. But we often, if we have ducks here for a prolonged period of time, they may be bonded with each other. And sometimes we'll rescue abandoned ones as groups, and we try to keep those groups together. Because a lot of people don't realize that ducks bond in long-term relationships just like we do, sometimes for life, sometimes for many years. They develop relationships, and they don't like to be broken up.
And it's great that you know that and that you respect that.
Absolutely.
We've discussed zoonotic diseases many times on this show over the last couple of years for obvious reasons, and we've done so because the origins of COVID-19 appear to be zoonotic, and that simply means that they come to humans from animals. And these animals could be bats with Ebola or Marburg or SARS. It could be birds with H5N1 bird flu or H7N9 bird flu. It could be swine flu, the H1N1. It could be seasonal flu that came from birds and can come from pigs. And on, many, many more. Basically, a lot of diseases get passed along from animals to humans when humans either go into nature and destroy the habitat for the animals and contact the animals and the diseases that they've had for a long period of time, or when we confine and raise animals for food. But bringing it back to Long Island, a backyard flock of birds recently tested positive for avian flu. Give us your thoughts on avian flu, about the dangers to humans and animals, and also tell us if this has impacted your work.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for asking. Avian flu, it's a very serious illness. It was detected in a backyard flock. I'm told it was a flock in Mastic that lived on the shore and was interacting freely with wild birds. There's been outbreaks of avian flu, which is a very high mortality rate, both in humans and in birds, in factory farms down south. So, unfortunately, when it's detected, you know, these flocks are wiped out by the tens of thousands. They're just killed because the humans in charge of the poultry industry, you know, they don't really care about getting these birds healthy. They just care about covering themselves and not being liable for people getting ill. So we are encouraging people not to buy, you know, to keep animals off their plates, because that's where, you know, factory farms are breeding these killer diseases. Thankfully, there has not been any bird to human transmission in North America. So no humans have been sick, but we are on high alert because this flock, this backyard flock, was sick, you know, in Mastic here. So we are taking extra precautions to keep our birds away from any wild birds who may be traveling up from these factory farms where they may have picked it up. And we are having very strict quarantine and testing procedures in place. I actually have a call tomorrow with the state vet to get all of our birds tested, because while they're all appear healthy, we want to make sure, you know, we're crossing our T's and dotting our I's before we adopt them out to anyone, which is also another reason why people should adopt, not shop. Because we give our birds medical care. We don't just kill them when they get sick. We care for them and we make sure they're healthy before we send them on.
And these zoonotic diseases, by the way, have killed many millions of people, starting with the 1918 flu that came from birds. So if you think that it's just something that will not impact us much, maybe a few people get sick here and there, it's a very serious issue. And of course, as I mentioned, COVID-19 is likely the result of a zoonotic transmission.
Yeah, well, we're actually trying to make the most of this, horrible situation right now. We actually have a billboard that we've mocked up and we're pitching around and we're going to place it all over Long Island that says animal exploitation breeds killer diseases. Keep animals off your plate and out of your classroom.
Good. Good. So with all that said, people love animals. Everyone does. You see them on commercials, you see them on TV shows, wherever you see them, they're meant to elicit feelings of happiness and love. And yet there's so much abuse going on. And the worst of it, of course, happens on our plates when we're eating meals. Do you feel that people accept your message better because there is this innate love of animals, or do you get resistance?
I think it depends on the person and depends on your approach. I mean, we try not to shame people. We try to just provide them with information and also not take, Smart. You know, I respect that you're vegan, but it's not for me for an answer either. I mean, certainly we do push back and because, I mean, I think it's an objective fact that humans are not better than animals and we're not more deserving of happiness and life than animals. I mean, I think that's a speciesist viewpoint. And I think speciesism is just like any other prejudice and it's wrong. But I think that we have logic and we have compassion and we have all the facts on our side. So we try our best just to educate the public and give them the facts and hope that they make the right decision and let them know that we're here to help them if they need help living a kinder life. I mean, even as a vegan, I mean, I'm not perfect. I'm always trying to live a little kinder. Every single one of us can always do better.
Yeah, that's smart. That's a smart approach and it's bound to succeed. You've thoroughly horrified our audience, which I'm happy about because it's not horrifying them about something they don't care about, but it's something about things that if they did know about, they would want to take action on, and we need to know about it. So how can people stay up to date on upcoming protests, events, and whatever else you have happening?
Yes, follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at HumaneLI, and sign up for our email list at humanelongisland.org. We always have lots of opportunities to volunteer. Especially if you're in the Ronkonkoma area, we're going to have lots of volunteer opportunities there very, very soon. Or if you're in Riverhead and you do want to do some direct animal care, we'd love to have it. But even if you're elsewhere, contact us and we'll work something out. There's lots of opportunities and lots of need to help animals, no matter where you are on this planet.
Any other thoughts before we close?
I think just if you want to get active, contact us. I when I first got into this, you know, it was just a commitment to go into one circus protest and look how it's ballooned.
Yeah.
So, you know, it can be the same for anyone else. I'm not special. I'm just been trucking for a long time. So if you want to get started, now's the time.
Great. Well, on behalf of the geese and the ducks and the elephants and the tigers and everyone else that you've helped, thank you. It's really heartening to hear about the work that you've been doing. So necessary. And the abuse of these animals for profit is just unfathomable. So you're acting for all of us. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet show on WUSB 90.1 FM. I've been speaking to anthrozoologist and the founding director of Long Island Orchestrating for Nature, or LION, John DiLeonardo. You can find out more about John and Lion by going to www.humanelongisland.org, humanelongisland.org. And as he mentioned, at HumaneLI on Instagram and Facebook, at HumaneLI. I'll be with you again at the same time next week on Friday, the 11th of March at 6 p.m. and every month thereafter at 6 p.m. on the first two Fridays of the month. And when I'm not here, be sure to listen to Natural Alternatives and the Healthy Planet radio shows every week at this time, with great hosts sharing cutting-edge information on health, our environment, and much more. That's every week, Fridays at 6 p.m. For more information on Healthy Planet and our radio shows, and if you're interested in having me do a virtual presentation to your school or group, visit our website at www.healthyplanetusa.org. That's healthyplanetusa.org. Or email us to join our mailing list at info at healthyplanetusa.org. Also, like our Facebook page, which is at healthyplanetusa. Until next time, stay strong, relax, make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing four or multi-legged friends. And remember to enjoy every moment of existence on this beautiful planet, even at times such as this, where the world is being challenged. Good night.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come. And I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one. And I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come. And I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
Ride on the peace train.
Ooh, ooh. Come on, the peace train. It's peace train, holy roller.
Everyone jump up on the peace train.
Ooh, 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 ooh. Come on, the peace train. Get your bags together. Bring your good friends too, 'cause it's getting nearer. It soon will be with you. Come and join the living. It's not so far from you. And it's getting nearer. Soon it will all be true. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
Light on the peace train.
Crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss? 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
Ride on the peace train.
Come on, the peace train. Is peace train a holy roller?
Everyone jump up on the peace train.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Come on, come on, come on.
Yes, come on, peace train. Hey, yes, it's the peace train.
Our climate is changing. Making a few changes to your driving habits can cut tailpipe emissions and improve fuel efficiency. Drive smart. Go easy on the brakes and gas pedal. Get regular tune-ups by following your vehicle's maintenance schedule. Check your tire pressure. Combine as many activities and errands into one trip as possible. Reduce your carbon impact to the environment. Act now on climate change.
A stay in the hospital for people of all ages can be a stressful and challenging experience. But every day, teams of volunteers in UCLA's People-Animal Connection, or PAC, make the lives of patients and their families better.
You see the patients get happier and more relaxed. They kind of forget that they're in a hospital bed.
The visits are provided to hospitalized patients without cost. Learn how you can get involved at uclahealth.org/PAC.
WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook.